celebration of the art of cinema.
Ghazali Cinema Town is the biggest cinema set in Iran, where the most iconic historical movies have been filmed. Could you think of a better place for foreign filmmakers to visit? Well, the guests of the Fajr Film Festival did exactly that.
Spending half a day in Iran's biggest and most prominent movie set turned out to be a unique experience for the foreign guests of the Fajr International Film Festival.
My name is Nihal and I've come here from Pakistan. It's my first time in Iran. I'm really honored to be participating in Fajr Film Festival. I could never have thought that I'll be able to visit Iran if it were not for this festival. I'm really happy to have visited the media town where there are film studios. I'm amazed to know that around 100 or more than 100 feature films are made in Iran every year. This has really inspired me to watch Iranian films. Many years ago when I was little, I watched Children of Heaven, in which there were child actors. I really liked that film. And in Pakistan, it's very difficult for us to watch Iranian films. We don't know much about these films, but we know that Iranian culture is rich with ideas, philosophy, and literature. So I'd like to go home and watch more Iranian films on YouTube. I was here to explore how I can link young filmmakers in Pakistan with opportunities in Iran, maybe do some co-production and discuss some possibilities about exchanging content. A lot of young filmmakers in Pakistan are struggling to have their work marketed in other countries. I was really happy to have visited all the stalls in the film market and explore some possibilities for connecting young filmmakers between the two countries.
Located on the outskirts of the Iranian capital, Tehran, with an area of about 115,000 square meters, Ghazali Cinema Town, as it is commonly referred to, was built over four decades ago. Back then, the movie set was designed for the filming of the epic historical drama TV series directed by Ali Hatami called Hazar Dastan, one of the most important and most influential works of art in the history of Iran's broadcasting.
I'm from Bangladesh. I'm a festival director of the Dhaka International Film Festival. This is my 30 years. I'm coming to this festival. First, I've been here in 1994, and this is 2024. It's 30 years. It's my 17th time. I've been many times in Iran, and many films I have screened in my festival. And also, I'm very happy that I know many types of filmmaker and actor, actress from Iran who has visited our festival. And we have a very good partnership with the Iranian films and our audience. Our audience definitely like the Iranian films. Without Iranian films, we cannot have the festival. So this is one of the major things, I mean, what we have Iranian segment. This year we had a master class. Majid Majidi was in Dhaka and he had a master class in Dhaka. It was very successful and I'm really looking forward in future we'll do more better. I'm a jury of the Eastern Vista, the Asian section jury. We have 11 films. We have still filmed need to watch, then finally we can say. We are watching and we have a very good numbers of films is there. So inshallah, we'll come decided very soon. I mean, which one is the best and which one is got the award. And overall, I'm sure pretty good collection selection is there. So many international delegates is there. So it's very nice. Good. Everything is okay. Perfect. This film city have been at least four times before in my life. First in 1994, I was there. First time. Later, I visited three times at least.
So what is your impression of this?
Well, it's beautiful. Like, I can't think about it. And Bangladesh, we cannot think about it. But definitely, it's like a role model. if my government give me a support, if they want me, then I will bring them here, come and see these things and try to build in our country.
Throughout the years, the locations that have been replicated here include iconic cities of the pre-Islamic and post-Islamic era. But probably the most favorite part is Tehran during the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, before, during, and after World War II. This part of the movie set has been used numerous times for the filming of big-budget movies and TV series.
My name is Caroline Marconi, and I am from Zimbabwe in Africa.
And how many times have you come to Iran or the Fajr Film Festival?
Well, I've been here before. I've stayed here for like close to 10 years because my father used to work here. Mm-hmm. But now I've come for the first time attending the Fajr Film Festival, and it was great.
So what is your position in attending the festival? Like, were you a jury or guest?
Oh, I'm a guest at the festival for now.
And how did you see the movies?
I think the movies are so good. The selection was really, really good. And there's a big variety of genres and like themes and all that. So I've really enjoyed my time here.
Did you just watch the international section or the Iranian movies?
No, also the Iranian movies. Uh-huh. I love those ones as well.
Okay, can you like name one or two from the Iranian or the international section?
Okay. This is the whole thing. There's one about a tree. I think it was some series of a tree or something like that. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really good. And then the one from Bangladesh as well was really good. But I forgot what
Bangladesh
it's called.
Bangladesh was, I think...
Something about it.
Yes,
yeah, exactly,
too.
Exactly. But it was a very good film. I've actually met
Mr.
one of
Adai
the...
Zamzam was the director.
Exactly. So good. It was such a good film. I loved it. And then from the Iranian ones, I can't really say the words anymore, but like really good films as usual. Love them.
Good. And also, how did you find the experience here? Like, we've started touring first. But it's the Azadi Cinema Town. So what do you say about it?
I think it's very good. It is such a very, very big place. I didn't think it would be that big. I think because it's different from my country, I'm quite impressed. We've just seen one of the workshops where they work on the attires and the costume designing. Mm-hmm. I thought that was amazing. They have like, it's a whole business going on here, an entire industry. It's so impressive. I love it.
In the workshops here, everything set and costume designers might need is made from scratch. And currently, another big-budget production is keeping everyone busy. A 60-episode TV series depicting the life of Salman al-Farsi, a Persian religious scholar and one of the companions of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him.
My name is Yulia. I represent Russia here. This is my first time in Iran and first time at the Fajr Film Festival. I'm so excited to be here. I'm having a great experience meeting Iranian producers, Iranian filmmakers, and I see a lot of potential for our countries to collaborate. So we are spending this time getting to know each other, finding ways for building stronger relationships. So I hope that after this film festival and this wonderful film market, which I very much appreciate for having me, that we're going to have a very strong collaboration for the next upcoming years.
A través de los vídeos que han mostrado.
Based on the information we got from the videos, I understand that many films and television series have been made here. So I conclude that there are many possibilities to make different films. The fact that you see all this in a country that is not considered Western makes it even more impressive. I think there is a lot of potential, and I am hopeful about the future cooperation, you know?
I'm so impressed of what I see here. I think there are a lot of possibilities for coming and filming here at the studio and just at the Tehran itself. And I'm sure that outside of Tehran, there are multiple amazing places that I would love to explore.
Ahora, el mundo cambia mucho.
I am very impressed by what I see here. There's a lot happening. Judging what I have seen so far, I am sure that great movies and television series have been filmed here. I'm excited to find out what projects are underway.
Currently owned by Iran's national television, IRIB, Ghazali Cinema Town offers great opportunities for joint movie projects, and therefore the foreign participants of the Fajj International Film Festival, who are all one way or another involved in the film industry, were eager to know how this could be possible. IRIB representatives were present to provide them with all the necessary details.
I come here to see the Iranian movies only, because I am also connected in the film selector of the Kolkata International Film Festival, Kolkata Children Film Festival. I've come to select some of the latest Iranian movies and also 2023 movies. Because this year, in our Calcutta Film Festival, this is one of the largest film festival with a award money of 51 lakhs. We have received 15 Iranian films for the competition, and I saw all of the names, and we selected three or four films Iranian. Then cinema, one of the best film, I cinema, for their storytelling, everything. It's like the Indian movies, not the commercial one, not the Bollywood one, but the other type of movies. Since I am from Calcutta, Bengali, so Calcutta and Bengali movies are similar to Iranian movies. Like storytelling, their sorrows, their loves, and everything, family affairs, everything is same. Iranian animation, I must like, and I selected this year also in our children festival, there are 15 Iranian movies, they are children films. Out of feature films, there are 8 feature films, and there are more than 10 shorts and documentary in children movies, and with the animation also.
And now, the moment of truth. In the closing ceremony, we'll find out which movies will be taking home the top prize.
The awards of the international section of the 42nd Fajj Film Festival were awarded almost as expected. Well, as we can see and you are aware, films from different countries were screened in the festival this year, and as expected, in the interfaith section, an honorary diploma was awarded to Iranian cinematographer Mr. Mahmoud Kalari for the movie Summertime. Summertime is a very poetic film that depicts and narrates the life of a family in Iran after the Second World War in the 40s and 50s. The very familiar perspective that Mahmoud Kalari himself has when describing his own past and childhood memories. The next film that received the main interfaith award is the movie Love, Passion, directed by Mr. Dariush Yari. Love, Passion presents an attractive and different narrative of Ashura and the Battle of Karbala to its audience. Mr. Yari was able to impress the jury and many movie critics. In the special section dedicated to Palestine in this year's festival, the section dubbed Palestine, Spirit and Soul, we had a lineup of very good movies. Most of the awards in this section were given to Iranian films. Only two of the awards were given to foreign films. The lineup in this section mostly included movies about war and its ramifications. The movie that received an honorary diploma was a film called Flight 175 from Iran. A very poetic story set during the 8-year Iran-Iraq war that we refer to as the Holy Defense. This movie narrates a very interesting love story. It's about a boy who finds a ring inside the belly of a fish. Later, we find out that this ring belonged to a volunteer soldier that fought in the 8-year war between Iran and Iraq. The jury awarded the main prize of this section to Khairullah Taghianipour, the Iranian cinematographer who entered the festival this year with his movie, The Heart of Raqqa. The film narrates a very exciting story about the presence of Iran's secret service members and intelligence forces and how they were able to infiltrate the Daesh terrorist group during the time they controlled the Syrian city of Raqqa. The film reveals the very positive impact that Iran's intelligence forces had in the fight against Daesh. The top secret operations of these forces are recounted in a romantic love story, and therefore it was very well received and made a huge impact. In the Eastern Vista section, the jury decided that the Best Acting Award should go to the movie Fatima. The Bangladeshi actor of this film was very much appreciated by the jury. In another section, the best screenplay was awarded to the film Zahir from Iran. The film is very poetic. It tells the story of a soldier named Zahir who builds a strong bond with an elderly couple. He develops an interesting relationship with an old man and his wife who live near the barracks where he is doing his military service. In my opinion, this year the jury was quite fair in choosing the winners. Having watched all of the movies in the festival, I personally agree with all of their choices. Now moving on to the best director. The award in this category was given to another film from Iran, The Western Sky, a very exciting and impactful movie about the life of one of Iran's Holy Defense national heroes named Shahid Shirudi. The movie was very well received. The special prize of the jury in this section was awarded to a film from Kazakhstan. And finally, the best film in the Eastern Vista section was awarded to a movie from Mongolia. In the final part of the Fajr International Film Festival, namely in the section dubbed Cinema Salvation, we awarded the Best Director Award to the Spanish movie called Upon Arrival. Well, we know that Spanish cinema is considered a very rich cinema. It has a very good reputation in the world, and it has introduced many outstanding directors to world cinema as well. For example, we have the famous Luis Buñuel from Spain, and we also know some of the new cinematographers of Spain, such as Pedro Almodovar, who is one of the most important cinematographers in the world today. He has created a great dynamic in Spain, which we can even see in the field of TV series production. During this year, he has a lot to say. Regarding the International Festival Award, in the main competition section of Cinema Salvation, the special prize of the jury was awarded to an Iranian film again. Once again, the movie made by Mr. Mahmoud Kalari, the well-known Iranian cinematographer, Summertime. Finally, the Best Movie Award of the Cinema Salvation section was given to a movie from Bulgarian cinema. Bulgarian cinema has really reached a very good dynamic and growth during these past few years. Giving an award to a film from this country shows that the Fajr International Film Festival has the stability that it should, and it has become a base for lesser-known films. In fact, the Fajr Festival introduces some very good films to its audience every year, while also communicating some exclusive ideas with them.
And that brings us to the end of our show, Seymour, our special coverage of the 42nd Fajr International Film Festival. Goodbye.
option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Leaders meeting with senior commanders and personnel of the Air Force and Army's Air Defense Force. On Monday, 5th of February 2024, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with a large number of commanders and personnel of the Iranian Air Force. The meeting took place in Tehran at the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya. In this program, we discuss the leader's remarks and points of views expressed at this meeting. Stay with us. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with a large number of commanders and personnel of the Iranian Air Force on Monday, 5th of February. This meeting takes place every year on or near 8th of February. On this day, in 1979, a group of Iranian Air Force officers pledged their allegiance to the founder of the Islamic Republic, the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, and joined the Islamic Revolution. Commemorating this amazing event, which gave further impetus to the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei referred to the events of 9th and 10th of February 1979, when the Shah's Imperial Guard attacked the training center of the Air Force and encountered some resistance from Air Force personnel. And more importantly, the weapons storage facilities were opened up and weapons were distributed among the public, and young revolutionaries became armed for the first time. The following day, on 11th of February 1979, the Shah's regime collapsed and the young revolutionaries, aided by the brave officers and personnel of the Iranian Air Force, succeeded in bringing down the Pahlavi regime. According to the leader, Air Force personnel injected hope and courage into the general public and dashed the hopes of the anti-revolutionaries when they ditched the Pahlavi regime in favour of the Islamic Revolution. Ayatollah Khamenei added, the Air Force took the lead in joining the revolution. Of course, the army, which was an upright, popular, Muslim and faithful body, easily joined the revolution, but the Air Force was in the vanguard. They initially brought about the extraordinary incident by pledging their allegiance to the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, on 8th of February 1979. It is also important to note that after this initial step, about 5 or 6 months later, the self-sufficiency jihad was established. The first branch of the armed forces in which the self-sufficiency jihad organization was formed was the Air Force. This is the same spirit of taking action, that is, the same spirit that leads an active member of the Shah's army towards freeing themselves and joining the Islamic Revolution. The state of courage, spirituality, and spiritual ability and spiritual strength, the same spirit later extends into the field of construction, resulting in the formation of the self-sufficiency jihad. The first place in which the self-sufficiency jihad was established was in the Air Force, and this was a momentous event. and was a great step for the Air Force to think about making their own equipment, manufacturing their own parts, repairing damaged parts, unraveling the secrets behind the complex American technology, which they were not previously allowed to do, and in short, taking action. That was a huge step to take. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei added, "Before this major step, the Shah's Air Force belonged entirely to the Americans. The fighter aircraft and other military equipment in the Air Force belonged to the Americans. It was a property of the United States, even though Iran had purchased the equipment and paid for it." Well, the faithful elements of the Air Force changed it from being American to being Iranian. The Air Force was Iranianized. It became Iranian. Its commanders became Iranian, its personnel became Iranian, its decision-makers became Iranian, and its equipment became Iranian. Although the equipment was made in America, but it belonged to the Iranian people. They did not dare touch it anymore. The Air Force was the catalyst of the Islamic Revolution. The Air Force, in a unique circumstance, became the catalyst of the Islamic Revolution's victory, and the catalyst for breaking the reliance of the Air Force and the Army on others. In further remarks, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "Major purposeful movements often slow down and suffer from a slump as they evolve. Even though they do not stop, they experience a state of sluggishness and lethargy. That is the nature of major movements. When you look at the numerous revolutions that have taken place across the world, you will see that a revolution that initially takes place with the intention of bringing about a fundamental transformation. However, after a few years, the same circumstances that existed before the revolution resurface once again. This is how it is. In other words, social movements often slow down, they often stop altogether or regress. If a revolutionary movement is to continue on its path, it requires a catalyst." Commenting further, the leader said, "Of course, there is a fundamental difference in the Islamic Revolution that differentiates it from other revolutions. The Islamic Revolution has some things within itself that are appealing to the masses and attracts followers. Even if some individuals decide to abandon the Islamic Revolution, many more individuals join the revolution and thus compensate for those who have parted ways. In the Islamic Republic, we are actively battling against oppression. There is the fight against oppression and standing against the coercion of the world-class bullies. We have the Jamkaran Mosque, the Ihya or Vigil Nights, the Arba'in Walk, and the I'tikaf during the month of Rajab. Note the extensive range of activities. There is both a battle against oppression and a battle against the carnal self. There is a focus on the future of the country as well as attention towards God, spirituality, and God's remembrance, or zikr, paradise, etc. This itself attracts followers to compensate for those who have parted ways." Elsewhere in his remarks, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "Therefore, a catalyst is needed. But what is the purpose of this catalyst? It is to prevent the slowing down of actions, to counteract fear, to avoid experiencing incompetence and inferiority in the operational group when a great task is about to be undertaken. This is where the role of the catalyst comes into play. So who is the catalyst and what do they do? We refer to these catalysts as the elite within society. But who are the elite? Are they well-known individuals, educated people or scientists, for example? No, the elite refers to a group of people who make decisions based on their own thinking and knowledge, rather than blindly following others. These people are regarded as the elite. These elites can be among various revolutionaries, business people, workers, military personnel, clerics, and various other groups. They can be among those who work in the media, students, or politicians. Ayatollah Khamenei added, "Fortunately, in our country, the elite are not in a minority. Those who think, make decisions, and take appropriate action based on a plan are many, and this is a blessing of the Islamic Revolution. This is not the case in many countries around the world. Now, I have not been there myself, but there are reports from some big and famous countries in the world that the general public are not aware of what is going on in the world around them. What they're concerned about is simply to earn a bit of money or add a bit to their wealth. This is not the case in our country. In our country, people who act with foresight, discernment, understand what they're doing, recognize the fronts, recognize the enemy, know their methods, and recognize who their friends are not few in number. They are numerous. These people can play an active role. They can undertake tasks for the country in critical cases. They have a heavy responsibility. What I would like to tell you is that those who have ideas, their views are thoughtful and discerning. They understand and recognize different situations. They know what is going on and refrain from blindly following others. They have heavy responsibilities. They need to maintain the general direction of the movement of society and not allow this movement to deviate. If elite members of society neglect their duty, the repercussions that follow will strike historic blows to the nation. We have experienced many incidents like this in the past, in the history of Islam. During the era of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein, peace be upon them, there were people among the elite who correctly understood and identified the issues, but were not present when their involvement was needed. These individuals were doubtful, indecisive, lazy, and sometimes even treacherous. Their negative impact spread to others, including those who blindly followed the majority. Commenting more on the elite, the leader said, "The enemy front has devised a special plan targeting the elite. They have plans for the elite in our country and in many other countries in the world. They seek to create doubts, hesitation, and indecisiveness in the elite. They seek to lure them with worldly pleasures to attract them so that they do not take decisive action at critical moments. This is something which is expected of the elite. The duty of the elite is to counteract the enemy's attempts to sow doubt and to clarify matters when necessary. The jihad of clarification is based on this." Commenting on the situation in the Gaza Strip, the leader said, "If I were to give an example regarding the elite in our present time, I believe it would be the situation in the Gaza Strip. The elite in the Islamic world have certain duties. The elite are scholars, scientists, politicians, and journalists. They see what is happening in the Gaza Strip. They realize how the United States, with the support of the Zionist regime, is hurting humanity. They're aware of this. They should talk to their own people and explain the situation in order to persuade them. The elite need to create a public demand amongst the people so that their governments will have no choice but to strike at the Zionist regime. Certainly, the elite can cut off economic relations with the Israeli regime. This is something that they should really ought to consider. If people around the world demand this from their governments and put pressure on them, this will happen, and it will be effective. Nations can compel their governments to withdraw their backing from the cruel Zionist regime, which is killing women and children, and the elderly in Gaza. In concluding remarks, the leader said, "May the Lord suppress this nation's enemies, and may the Iranian nation emerge victorious. God's greetings, mercy and blessings upon all of you."
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Back to Reality. Well, this is Asma. Once more, I have the pleasure to be your host in here. And here with me, I have two very dear guests, Brother Hassanain and Sister Bita. Welcome.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you for having us.
Assalamu alaikum, dear sister, brother, and listeners. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, wa alaikum assalam, both of you.
I am Bita, and I'm studying medicine at one of the universities in Tehran.
I'm Hassanain, and I'm studying in a Hausa, and I'm pursuing Islamic sciences from the Islamic Seminary Qom.
Wish you both a lot of luck. So we usually think of our body as something that exists there without taking care of it perfectly, like not as in the way that people who go to gym do or like the models take care of their bodies. No, not in that sense. In the sense that, okay, my body, each part of it, like my hands, my eyes, my skin, everything in my body is once going to be as the witness to whatever has happened to it. Like, for example, you use your hands so much, writing things, painting things, whatever. And this hand has got a feeling of its own self. One day is going to ask you about what you have done to it. And you have to be responsible for it.
Exactly. We actually don't realize about this. Mm-hmm. We think that this body, like our body, is just our body.
Yeah.
Like we are the only owners of it.
I'm not responsible for it. Yeah. Whatever happens, yeah. I'm there to take it for my benefit. Yeah,
but actually, it is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that He's the actual owner of it.
Exactly.
Like, He has given this body to us. Mm-hmm. Like as He mentions in the Holy Quran, Surah Fussilat, in the verse 20. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. حتى إذا جاءوها شهد عليهم سمعهم وأبصارهم وجلودهم بما كانوا يعملون. He says like their ears, eyes, and skins will, when they reach it, testify against them for their misdeeds.
Exactly.
They're gonna testify against you. You're thinking, oh, this is my body. Like yeah. You know,
I rule over them.
Unfortunately, the point of view that we have towards our own bodies, it is something like it is ours. And okay, I have
it
hands
is mine for the
eyes.
Taking.
Yeah, but it's not like that. Your body is a complete amazing world. Mm-hmm. Whenever I study these immune systems mechanisms for actually defending body against some microbes and something like that, I feel like there is someone there in my body protecting me, and this feeling always is a reminder for me. It is something beyond all the physical and materialistic point of view that we have. And these words of Holy Quran that Brother Hassanain recited was really beautiful and shocking at the same time, that you have this witness with you everywhere you go, everything you do,
every moment, every second,
you know? Yeah. And it's a bit scary, yeah. But at the same time, so beautiful.
It adds to your responsibility. You know, this yeah. body is not just something that is for you to take advantage of it. No, it has been entrusted with you. And please do focus on the word entrusted with you.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
Well, we're back, and this is Back to Reality. We're talking about the responsibilities that we have toward our body, whatever part of our body once is going to be giving some testimonies against us or for us. So yeah. Both of them, they work as witnesses to whatever we have done in this world. So I said that we should focus on the very fact that this body, which is a blessing, which has been bestowed upon me, has been entrusted with me. So I have to take care of my responsibilities toward this body, be it my eyes, be it my ears, my mouth, my tongue, whatever. How do you define taking care of these blessings that we have?
We need to check like whatever Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made halal on us. So like, you know, we free to do that. Taking care of these parts mm-hmm. means like, you know, protecting them yeah. from what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has asked us to forbid that.
Yeah.
You know, to stay away from that.
Exactly.
You know, protecting means staying away from the haram.
The first step to take care of these
protecting
parts,
from haram stuff.
Yeah, is to protect them from haram stuff and
like what is forbidden.
To ignore all the things that have been forbidden to us.
Yeah.
And you.
Yeah, and another method that I use myself, mm-hmm. you know, I sit somewhere quiet and I think with myself, okay, what did I do with my own hands today? What did I say with my own tongue? This is something really scary because yeah. you have to dig into every detail that you've done in every moment of that day, and it will make your day miserable, I bet. And this is something really difficult. And
yeah,
but I do it.
Difficult and nice.
Rarely.
But are you going to always say the truth?
And the interesting part is that whenever you go through this process, you face your lying to yourself.
Yeah, because there's a sound
scary.
From the within
yeah.
that comes and tell you, no, this is not the
exactly.
thing that you're saying.
And not only lying, but most of the time you try to
manipulate.
Justify yourself.
Yeah,
and manipulate
your
the situation.
Yeah.
It, because that person did decide that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm afraid. I'm afraid of afterlife. I'm afraid of the consequences of whatever
yeah.
I'm doing.
I mean, you're still
like
aware.
Yeah, and this is a reminder for you that you're going through the right path. And right path doesn't mean that you shouldn't do any mistakes. You shouldn't make any mistakes, or you shouldn't, for example,
you must be infallible. No,
yeah, exactly.
You as a human being are prone.
You are imperfect.
Well, I say it again, you're just prone, not that you have to. You're prone to doing mistakes, but then the important part is to learn from those mistakes and not to get into the trap of those mistakes again and again and again.
And this opportunity actually will help you to not getting drowned into regrets and
mm-hmm.
so other things, which are really scary.
Yeah.
Because you actually caught your hope from Allah Almighty and you think like, I'm not gonna actually, you know, I'm not going to be forgiven, excused for everything I did. So I'm not going to actually ask for Allah Almighty's attention. And this
mm-hmm.
is something bad. This is one of the traps of Satan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And now there's another point to it. Like, look at today's life. People are taking care of their bodies, but what actually they are doing is to make it look like better in order to take advantage of it. So this is also another part that we have to talk about it, but let's go for a short break and then we'll be back. We're talking about the responsibilities that we have toward our body, and then Sister Bita and Brother Hassanin are here. I have a responsibility. I do believe in it. I will take care of my body. But now, the intention that I have when I say I would take care of my body is very important. Like, what do you see right now in today's world? How do you define it? Are they really taking care of their bodies, or is it again taking care of my body for doing a forbidden thing.
The thing that you mentioned about the physical care that we are giving to our body, like rhinoplasty, like all of the plastic surgeries that we are doing for beauty.
Yeah, even going to gym in an excessive way.
And making money out of this beauty. Yeah, like, for example, social media influencers, celebrities, and so on. And this is something sad and superficial, because we are forgetting the real
Is it meaning. Really taking care of your body?
No, it's not. I mean, it's a bit difficult to actually differentiate between being healthy and being excessively sensitive.
Well, I would put it this way. There is a difference between staying healthy and being dependent on your body, on your shape, and on your gestures.
Exactly. Yeah, having that's eyes the appearance only.
Yeah, the appearance. So still, they're doing the wrong thing with their bodies.
It's not making them healthy, right? So, you know, just they're, you know, beautifying themselves. And that's not real them. You know, that's not real them. They have undergone, through surgeries. So they're actually, and also there are actually many risk in these type of surgeries. And there are many side effects. Mm-hmm. So, you know, who's going to be responsible for this? You know, you're accountable for everything. Like, what are you going to, like, when your body actually complains, like, you did this to me. Like, what do you have an answer for it? And apart from that, you know, even not doing...
There actually would be no answer at that moment.
Yeah, like, apart from, like, you know, not doing the surgeries, not undergoing through surgeries and all, you know... Having a bad diet might also be...
anorexia for girls, for models. They go through too much of difficulties in order not to eat food. And it's just a sad story.
Even some of them die from
some of them even die.
Like feeding yourself only with junk food might also be an example.
Exactly.
Like you're not taking care of your body.
Yeah, so please do not deceive and cheat yourself and say that, no, I am taking care of my body. No, you're not taking care of your body. You're just taking care of your ego and of how you're going to look in people's eyes. That's the only thing that matters to you.
Yeah.
And now maybe some people would say that, okay, no, I love to look like this. Okay, if you're going to look like a healthy person, you don't have to go through extremes of those surgeries. Or I'm not saying that those surgeries are bad, because some of them would change the entire, you know...
I get it.
They would just change you. Not all of them are bad, but then to go to an excessive extreme of those beautifying stuff is the thing which is problematic.
Yeah, for sure. You're clarifying the point that even in our own religion, Islam, there is a recommendation for you to stay healthy, to
take care of
sport,
yourself,
to go to gym, and all of these things, and eat healthy food. And these are so important, and you have to keep your body healthy, but it doesn't mean that you have to use body as a tool of showing your personality.
That is the point.
There is a deeper part of yourself that you have to nourish, and this is your soul.
Exactly.
Okay. Most of the time, we feel like we have to nourish our body, but we forget our soul, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately. And this is the thing that we see a lot in nowadays life.
It's not the problem of those people themselves. Sometimes the society put this burden on you to be beautiful.
That's very true. Yeah. The imposing ideology on people, the criteria that make for a beautiful man and a beautiful, a handsome man and a beautiful woman.
Exactly.
Yeah, so like it's our responsibility not to get carried away by these, like, you know, norms and criterions set by the
society.
These
are ideologies, you know, because the power and the propaganda are
like,
going to shape them.
In today's world, like, you know, especially in the West.
They set the rules for their benefit, and then everybody has to go according to that.
In fact, you know, this actually makes them more ugly. Like, it makes them uglier.
Yeah.
You know, the natural face, you know, they lose that and it makes them uglier. So one of the factors behind setting these, like, you know, norms is in the society is also a business. Because plastic surgery...
That is it.
Yeah, and it's a big industry. Mm-hmm. It's a big, you know, industry. Like, you know, they make a lot of money, you know, like different types of surgeries.
Yeah.
So this is also, you know, for making money. You know, people set these... norms in the society, and eventually people also, you know, they fall for the scam.
Exactly. So when you are taking care of your body, first try to clear up your intention for your own self, and then second of all, this body has been entrusted with you. You have to take care of it. How you take care of it, like, for example, do not burden your tongue more than it could just endure. Do not lie with that tongue. Do not do and say stuff that you shouldn't say, because you are actually hurting your tongue. This tongue is going to be questioning you in the hereafter, and you have to be responsible enough to give it a logical, justifiable answer.
You did something wrong with it, like you maybe, God forbid, like you hit someone.
Yeah.
Or you want your hands to, you know, testify that, you know, oh God, he helped so many people with these
hands.
Yeah,
you can write something so important with these hands, and then these hands are going to be the source of many good things that happen in the world, in people's thought and in their ideologies. So all of these things, the things that have been given to you have the potential to be good and work for you, and at the same time they have the potential to be bad, and according to what you do to them, of course, act against you. So just keep that in mind and take care of yourself and your body, whatever, and stay healthy. That was all. I hope you enjoyed it. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, يا ربي لدي أمة رائزك
يا الله
يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمة رائزك لتصي دليلتك once again.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Limelight.
In Britain, local authorities and charities are urging the government to extend its Household Support Fund scheme, which was first introduced in autumn of 2021 and distributed among local councils to help those in need during the cost of living crisis. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The website of iNews has covered this story and tells us more. UK councils warned free school meals during holidays will likely be withdrawn for hundreds of thousands of school pupils after Easter due to the end of government funding. Local authorities and charities are urging the government to extend its Household Support Fund scheme, which was first introduced in autumn of 2021 and distributed among local councils to help those in need during the cost of living crisis. Originally set to last until spring of 2022, the scheme had been extended 3 times, taking the total amount of funding to £2.5 billion, while England was given a further £842 million in April of 2023 in order to support those in need. However, the fund was not mentioned in the autumn statement by the Chancellor and is now due to come to an end on 31st of March. The scheme has been used by local councils to fund free school meal vouchers during the holidays, which has become a lifeline for low-income families during and since the pandemic, and takes up much of the money local authorities receive through the scheme. Beverly Craig, leader of Manchester City Council, said it is heartbreaking to think that her local authority will no longer be able to fund free school meal vouchers and other cost of living support when the fund comes to an end. She said, "We're a city that has historic levels of poverty and deprivation, often overlooked. Over 43% of our kids are growing up in poverty. Council analysis has shown that 20% of Manchester residents have a disposable income of less than £30 a month after rent, food and bills." Beverly Craig said, "Last year alone, the city spent over £50 million alleviating poverty and dealing with the cost of living crisis," adding that the council has been assisted this year by a household support fund grant of £12.9 million. Councillor Craig said that this has enabled the council to help 60,000 people, including 40,000 children, receiving free school meal vouchers outside of term time. 12,500 vulnerable households getting cost of living support payments, 6,000 children benefiting from a holiday activity fund, and 400 care leavers accessing a boost to their income. Beverly Craig said, "So for a city like us, losing out on the household support fund, it really is a problem. The 60,000 people that we're able to support in addition to all of the work that we're doing around poverty stops overnight." She added, "We're seeing vulnerable families who had a little bit of money tucked away for a rainy day have spent the rainy day money." Manchester City Council is calling for a year-long extension to the Household Support Fund, considering that economic forecasts suggest that the situation may have improved slightly by this time next year. But obviously, there's a longer-term discussion that this should be mainstreamed into budgets. Bella Sankey, the leader of Brighton and Hove City Council, which together with councils in Plymouth, Lambeth, Bristol and Southampton, has written to the government to stress the importance of the Household Support Fund, said that she has been horrified by what she has seen and heard in local food banks. She said, "Demand is now out of control, completely outstripping supply, like nothing that has ever been experienced before. The amount of discretionary food vouchers we would previously give out over the course of a year during COVID now goes out the door in just 1 month." She added, "The concern is that people are clearly going without food," adding that the situation could potentially be having an impact on school attendance, as she has heard from one parent who was terrified about their child going to secondary school and needing to find the money to pay their bus fare. She said, "Those are the sorts of calculations and decisions people are having to make." Graham Witham, the Chief Executive Officer of Greater Manchester Poverty Action, said that the Household Support Fund has been really important, adding that the Free School Meals Council have been able to provide during holidays has helped build a safety net for families. Graham Witham said, "The other side of it is that councils themselves are cash-strapped and don't have a significant ring-fence funding for welfare provision. So this has just been massive. It's enabled councils to stand up to responses to need that they wouldn't have been able to do otherwise. And it's created some space for innovation as well." He said he believes that historically, government has washed its hand of local welfare provision, but that the Household Support Fund helped it to understand the value of the role that local authorities have. Graham Witham, the CEO of Greater Manchester Poverty Action, sees the end of the funding as a big cliff edge because cost of living support payment from the government ends in March as well. He called for permanent ring fence funding for local welfare provision by local councils. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the story and tells us more. Lynn Perry, the chief executive of the British charity Barnardo's, said, across the